You're listening to Pathetic. I'm Blair.
And I'm Eli. And here at Pathetic, we don't just ask who let the dogs out, we ask why.
Dogs were barking, monkeys clapping. Then I get up on table and I said, I meet you 10:45 on the Broadway canal. Disco radical transglobal.
The only reason we ask why let the dogs out is because my dogs keep barking. So if you hear barking in the background, it's not the Baja Men, it's just Rory and Zero.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point, too.
Yeah,
that,
why let
that,
the dogs out?
That song
out?
Asked one of the W's, and there were more W's. They need to know who, when, where, why, and sometimes how.
Yeah, sometimes how is answered in the course of asking the rest of the questions. I mean, it really depends. And also, who were the Baja Men asking? Whom were the Baja Men asking? Were they just sort of making a general call? Or do they have like a subject in an interrogation room and they're like, we need to know.
Who let the dogs out? Where are they? That's my Batman inquiring where the dogs are impression.
It's like that scene in The Wire where they're like, I killed him. He was my dog, yo. And the police officer's like, oh, yeah, he's totally responsible for this murder. But he literally meant that he killed a dog. It's like sometimes when you say fat, but you spell it with a PH, but you can't tell when you say it out loud, it means cool and has nothing to do with the girth of the person in question.
Yeah, I don't think people have really used PHAT in a while.
I never heard people use it anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something that ever really existed. I think it's just a collective dream that people once used it.
There was probably some marketing team behind it, and they're like, we're going to get this to catch on. This is totally jerking.
Yeah, didn't work.
Anyway, so it's January, which means that you're probably looking to get away from wherever you are.
Except me, because it's hot in Los Angeles.
Unless you live in Los Angeles, but none of us do. Some of us live in Philadelphia, which is a temperate zone and miserable. Except today it was 55. But you may also wonder, where have all my favorite bands gone? If only they were in the same place, maybe on a cruise ship, where I could go visit them and hear them play all day, and also drink frozen margaritas the size of my head.
Well, guess what? The weekend of October 18th to the 21st, you can.
Wait a minute, I didn't realize this was in October. That's a terrible time to go on a cruise.
Yeah, so this cruise is not until the end of October.
But mark your calendars. In case you haven't heard, Mark McGrath and friends are having a cruise from Miami, Florida to Nassau, Bahamas. And I don't even think I can make a joke about that. Like, it is its own joke. It's a punchline. Like,
I mean,
it sounds like an SNL sketch.
Let me read the performers that are going to be on this cruise, because okay. It is a veritable...
It's a constellation of stars.
It's just incredible what we've got here. You've got Smash Mouth.
Awesome.
Like, right there. I'd go on a cruise with just Smash Mouth.
I would, if it was just, like, a meet and greet for, like, 7 days with Smash Mouth, they wouldn't even have to play music. In fact, it might be better if they didn't. I just want to hang out with the guys from Smash Mouth.
Somebody once told me I'd be on a cruise ship and I got to get myself away from this place.
Nice. You should write their jingles.
Yeah, I should. Gin Blossoms, who actually I like.
I only know Hey Jealousy.
Only their first album is good because the dude who wrote all those songs killed himself before they finished the album.
Oh, nice.
So, like,
oh, wait, that's not nice at all. What am I saying?
So, like, the success of that first Gin Blossoms album is mostly from a dead dude who didn't record much on the album, actually.
Kurt Cobain.
Yeah. It makes Hey Jealousy really sad when you figure out that, like, he actually just was a very sad person.
Yeah,
that
totally.
Famously around town, you know?
Well, who else is there?
Sugar Ray, of course, since Mark McGrath's there.
No, here's a question. Is it the original Sugar Ray? I have a feeling it's just a backing band and Mark McGrath.
I think that's what it might be.
Because,
I think
Sugar Ray, by this point, like, it's 2013. They've probably broken up.
Yeah, I mean, and then Mark McGrath is hosting, like, Extra for a while. Or Entertainment Tonight.
I think he still is. He's one of those, like, guys. I mean, he has frosted hair. You can't take him seriously as a musician. Kurt Cobain would never frost his tips.
You know who'd be on this cruise? Guy Fieri, just for fun.
Probably.
Like, this seems like his kind of cruise.
Some, like, donkey sauce burgers or whatever.
Hey, I'm Guy Fieri. Here at this, would the cruise ship be a diner, a drive-in, or a dive?
Here's another question. Have you ever seen Mark McGrath and Guy Fieri in the same place?
No, I haven't.
No.
Or the singer of Smash Mouth.
Yeah. I think that Mark McGrath got diabetes and changed his name and his vocation and became Guy Fieri.
Be amazing. Other bands here, Cracker.
Okay, wait, I have a question about this one. Is it Uncle Cracker, or is there another band called
Cracker?
There's
a band called Cracker, a 90s alternative band called Cracker.
Okay.
The Spin Doctors, they've got a song, you know.
Oh my god, I love the Spin Doctors.
Vertical Horizon.
Oh, I like them too. It took me a while to remember who they were, because I mixed them up with, shit, not Three Doors Down. What's the other band that has three in it?
I don't know.
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend.
Oh, Third Eye Blind. Not quite three, but third.
It's somehow tertiary.
Yeah, okay. Somehow tertiary bands.
Right.
The other band they have is The Verve Pipe. Not to be confused with The Verve of Bittersweet Symphony fame.
You mean the Rolling Stones that they ripped off to write Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah, but, I mean, The Verve is so much better. So, like, The Verve Pipe sort of just a disappointment when you add the pipe at the end.
I don't know. Pipes make things exciting. Ask any hobbit.
Then Marcy Playground. The only Marcy Playground song I know is Sex and Candy.
I've never heard of them.
It's the one where he says he likes sex and candy.
I don't think anyone would disagree, except maybe diabetics. Ergo, Guy Fieri.
I haven't heard the whole song in a while, so I don't know if he's saying he likes them separately or together. You know.
Together, you're just asking for a yeast infection, so I'm going to guess separately.
I'm going to write a song called Sex or Candy.
It's like you can have one or not the other, depending on your age. Are you over 18? The former. Under 18? The latter. But call me later. That song is vaguely pedophilic.
Sex or Candy is okay. I'll take either. I might prefer one over the other, but I would not be disappointed.
Like maybe you can get on like an every other day schedule. Okay, so there's special acoustic performances with Ed Roland of Collective Soul. I've heard of Collective Soul, but I don't know who Ed Roland is. And then also Ed Kowalczyk, probably, formerly of Live.
Oh, yeah, because then remember Live tried to get that guy from American Idol for a while to sing for them?
Nope.
You know that guy that I'm forgetting his name?
No.
The rocker. Yeah, so I guess they kicked the lead singer out of Live.
Oh, sucks for
them. I guess they didn't long love him. That's a Live lyric reference.
I'm looking on the FAQ for this because there were a lot of questions I had. I don't know if mine will be frequently asked.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I have tons of questions.
Like, okay, here's the best one. Will I get seasick? Answer. Chances are you will not. However, if you tend towards motion sickness, you can purchase something over the counter or see your capital D doctor before you go. That's not even a question, and it's not even an answer.
What should I pack? Whatever you wear at home that you're comfortable in is what you can wear when at port.
Have you ever seen people on a cruise? Like, they're not dressing up, except for when it's mandatory to dress up. And even then, I'm not so sure.
Going on a cruise is something I have no desire to ever do. Like, I don't get the appeal of it.
I mean, based on my knowledge of cruises, which is limited to Facebook photos of people I kind of know, David Foster Wallace and Tina Fey, it sounds like the worst thing ever.
Like, I'd rather go somewhere than just go on something.
Yeah. I also like how they preface the frequently asked questions section. If you've never been on a cruise before, you are likely to have lots of questions about it. Thank you. How do I get to the ship from the airport? Are meals included in the price? What do I have to pay for while on the cruise? These are all great questions, and we've got the answers for you. I'm like hearing this in Mark McGrath's voice.
I like the first question, what is included in the price? And number six is surprise jam sessions.
And number seven is, and other surprises, including drowning. I mean, you don't know. It's a surprise.
I just would love to surprise jam with the members of Smash Mouth, you know?
I'm pretty sure that the Titanic was actually called String Quartet and Friends Cruise.
What if this one hit an iceberg and all our favorite 90s acts died in one? The day the music died, it would really be part two.
Yeah, Buddy Holly would look like shit compared to this. I think drowning is a much more tragic death. I mean, Aaliyah notwithstanding, and DJ AM, who I guess...
Wait, did Aaliyah drown?
No, she died in a plane crash. I'm just saying, these days, musicians die in plane crashes if it's going to be a transportation-related death. Maybe car crashes, but mostly it seems like planes. I haven't heard about any famous musician dying in a cruise, maybe because there aren't very many music cruises.
Yeah, but like music cruises are becoming a thing now.
They totally are. I was reading about it in The New Yorker and they were like, yeah, Coachella has its own ship and it takes like, you know, sleigh bells out to sea. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather see sleigh bells on dry land Thank you.
I'd rather say see sleigh bells in the correct season. Am I right?
No. Eli.
I would have seen them last month.
Sleigh Bells is a hipster band, and I just made that up. I don't even know if they're cool anymore. I was listening to a Sleigh Bells song today, which means probably they're not, because it's from Mix CD from 2 years ago.
I think they were the fall quarter show at U Chicago this year, I'm pretty sure.
So they've jumped the shark, which would take on new meaning if they were an act on a cruise ship.
Oh, man, there should be a Happy Days cruise.
I'm sure Barry Winkler would do it.
You mean Henry Winkler? Were you confusing Henry Winkler with Barry Zuckerkorn?
Did I say Barry Winkler?
Yep.
Cool. Here's the question, though. What musical acts would there have to be on a cruise to make you go on the cruise?
Yeah, let me think.
Like,
it would have to be pretty fucking incredible. Because cruises are expensive. Like, you're paying like $650
for a ticket. They're not fun. Like, I have negative enjoyment just thinking about going on a cruise. So, like, it's kind of that, like, pay me to go on situation. Because, like, I get seasick and I hate boats and I don't really swim very much. So, like, everything sucks.
Like, man, to be on
Oh, and I hate buffets and fat people. I just can't go on a cruise, basically. But, yeah, like
your checklist, whatever you're checking off is on a cruise.
I don't know. I don't think I'm a big enough fan of any band or bands.
Yeah, I'm not sure, especially considering, like, the ticket price of getting on a cruise. Like, forget being on a cruise entirely and just consider that it costs, like, over $600 to go on this. And that's the cheapest price. That's probably, you know, the shitty cabin. Let me see. Let's take a look at pricing.
I don't even want to know. Like, I would almost consider going on this if it were convenient and cheap. Because, like, I'm not above ironic laughs, but...
Ironic cruises? I mean, we can get a Kickstarter going. The pathetic, pathetic cruise. We could do the pathetic cruise. We should just get in on this game.
It would probably be like the two of us on some, like, someone's parents' fishing boat with, like, my Zoom H2 recorder. I'm like, well,
welcome
guys,
to the pathetic cruise.
If you need to throw up, just sort of tilt your head off to the side of the boat.
So the cheapest ticket price is $649, and that's for one person in a 1A interior stateroom. I don't know what that means, but...
It's probably... Okay, you saw Titanic, right? So that means you're the poor Irish people, and every night, instead of Mark McGrath...
They're gonna lock them down.
Yeah, you just have to, like, dance in a circle with Kate Winslet, which would actually not be so bad, but...
I would go on this cruise if I were guaranteed that I could paint the naked Kate Winslet.
I would pretty much go on any cruise like that.
The most expensive ticket price is $1,800 to have a grand suite room.
I don't know. If you're going to go on this cruise, like, you might as well go all out. Because, like, the worst thing ever would be to go on this cruise and then get stuck in, like, a shitty closet of a room.
But, like, no, but you wouldn't... Why would you want to be in your room? Why would you go on a cruise then stay in your room? That would be pointless.
Because maybe you're seasick. Or maybe you hate good music.
You'd miss the surprise jam sessions. I'm trying to think of a cool way to say sessions. Like, I know sesh is the cool way to say session short, but I don't know if, like, pluralizing it seshes doesn't sound as cool as sesh.
I feel like Sean Connery. But here's the other thing. Like, I can understand maybe young hipsters with tons of disposable income going on a cruise to see Sleigh Bells or whoever the nom du jour is. But, like... Are, you know, 35 to 40-year-olds really going to be like, yeah, man, let's go on this Mark McGrath
cruise? Every morning when I wake up on this cruise, I get to see some really real cool bands. That's my every morning.
Shut the door, baby. Don't say a word. Shut the porthole, baby.
I hope that they have. That's their, like, do not disturb door hangers.
Shut the door, baby.
Don't say a word to me because I don't want to be disturbed.
Yeah. And then, like, you know,
I wish you. And if you have a one night stand on the cruise, it's even more like the lyrics of Every Morning.
You need to borrow the halo hanging from the corner of your girlfriend's four post bed. I can't.
Is that what's going on in that song?
Yeah, I think. I mean,
wait. Let's actually break down the Every Morning lyrics real quick, because I never thought about this.
I don't.
So every morning there's a halo hanging from the corner of his girlfriend's four-post bed.
I know, and then... it's not mine, but I was wondering if I could borrow it for a weekend or a one-night stand. Shut the door, baby, don't say a word. Yeah, that sounds like infidelity.
His girlfriend has a magical bed where a halo appears every morning, with which he can use to have a one-night stand to cheat on said girlfriend who has magical bed. What a dick.
Wait, are you saying that the net conclusion of this analysis of the lyrics is that Mark McGrath sucks?
Yeah, no, yeah, like we should have known years ago how bad Mark McGrath was.
Well, I think it's safe to say that this cruise is not worth the irony.
But what does that lyric mean?
It doesn't, well...
Like, it's like I can't even think metaphorically what that means.
I'm not sure Mark McGrath even knows what a metaphor is.
Like he was just string words. Every morning there's a... It's like a Mad Lib.
Kind of.
Down halo, hanging from the corner of my girlfriend's...
Four-post bed. Yeah, that rhymes.
Then his next down was like one night, something that you might have.
Yeah, wait, stand and bed don't even rhyme. This song sucks.
So after he says, I could use it for the weekend or a one night stand, he says, couldn't understand how to work it. So he didn't know how to use the halo to have a one night stand. But once again, as predicted, it left his broken heart open and you ripped it out. How is she ripping out the heart when he's the one using a halo to cheat on her?
Also, what's with the sudden introduction of the second person? Like, that just makes things confusing. There are too many pronouns.
But then remember the next verse. It's every morning there's a heartache hanging from the corner of my girlfriend's four-post bed. I know it's not mine, and I know she thinks she loves me, but I never can believe what she said. Something so deceitful. So I don't know which way the infidelity is running.
I think it's both.
And imagined girlfriend. So maybe this is just a song about sadness, about how they're both, you know. They're in this spiral of infidelity and...
I heard that the original title for this was actually Hey Jealousy.
Oh, wow.
Like, let's not be crass, but maybe the world would be better off if the fate of the lead singer of the Gin Blossoms had actually been that of Mark McGrath, and this cruise were actually called Lead Singer of the Gin Blossoms and Friends.
Yeah. Man, like, that's so sad, the Gin Blossoms. I love driving around while listening to Hey Jealousy, because they have the lyric, drive around this town. You know, so it feels like
so
doing what they're singing. It's cool.
Yeah, it's like how I love listening to Every Morning in the Morning, because it has that lyric, every morning.
But you also have to be in your girlfriend's four-post bed that has a halo hanging from the corner, or a heartbreak.
Where else would I wake up?
I wouldn't want to wake up anywhere else.
Exactly.
No, like, Hey Jealousy, that's a roll the windows down, blast the song kind of song, you know?
Crack open your porthole and set sail for good tunes.
A few episodes ago, or last episode, I talked about my latest reality TV obsession, which was Undercover Boss. And now I'm super into a show called Shark Tank, which apparently everyone else had watched. But I
never watched it, and I thought it was literally about sharks. I thought it was part of Discovery Shark Week. Au contraire.
Oh, no. This is about more metaphorical sharks.
I'm intrigued.
So this is a show where, you know, there's like five rich people, and then people come in and pitch their products or businesses, and the investors can invest for equity in the company. But it's real, which is what's kind of like, it's, they're using their own money. It's not just them pretending that they're going to pay to invest in these companies. This is a real negotiation happening. So it's actually, you know, pretty cool. And, you know, there's lots of pathos because people put all their blood, sweat, and tears into their company and then don't get an investment, or they get a big
pathos.
They're going to become, you know, a millionaire because they got an investment from Mark Cuban or something.
This is like the pre-show to Millionaire Matchmaker. It's like you watch this and you watch a company get rich, and then when the CEO is finally successful enough that he can turn his thoughts to love, in comes Patty Stanger and that guy with the big mohawk.
Yeah, the people that I had a job interview with once.
Don't you sort of feel like there's a general progression of reality shows? Like, you know, you start with, like, I don't know, Shark Tank, and then you go to Millionaire Matchmaker, and then you're married, and then you go to Undercover Boss because you want to make sure that your company is being run well.
It's like Millionaire Matchmaker is the sequel to Shark Tank, just the way that Zero Dark 30 I consider the sequel to Lincoln,
like the distant sequel. And in that sense, Avatar is kind of a sequel to Zero Dark 30.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I like to think all movies being along one time continuum, where when I see a movie, the first thing I go is like, is this a sequel to Lincoln? Or
right.
You know, Zero Dark 30, you know, is just, you know, it's zooms to that country you learned about in Lincoln.
Right. When they mention the mounting tension in the Middle East, you wonder where that plot thread is going to go, and then boom.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going, you know, you're watching Lincoln, and you're going, this country, I wonder what this country I'm learning about is going to look like in 200 years.
Yeah.
And then Zero Dark Thirty takes you to that place in a way that Lincoln couldn't, because there wasn't time travel in Lincoln.
Well, not in this Lincoln.
Yeah, in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, maybe there was. I don't know.
I actually have no idea if there was. But it's kind of like when you play that game where, like, every character played by the same actor is actually the same character. So when I was watching Zero Dark Thirty, I was like, oh, Coach Eric Taylor, now in the FBI. But he was also in the FBI in Argo. It's like Kyle Chandler is making a career. Like, first he was a guy who just got the newspaper a day early. Then he was, like, a tough but lovable football coach in rural Texas. And now he's working with the feds.
Yeah.
It's been an exciting career arc for Kyle. I can't think of any of the characters' names now except for Coach Eric Taylor. Because, like, the FBI agents in Zero Dark Thirty, do you remember any of their names? I didn't even know what the main character's name was till I read a review of it after the fact.
Yeah, no, totally.
And I'm not talking about Osama bin Laden. I mean, like, the girl.
And even Osama bin Laden was UBL in that movie.
I know, and I was like, what's the U stand for? And I was like, oh, Yosama.
Yosama.
Yosama. Yosama, they're bombing us. Also, Burt Macklin FBI was in it too, which was exciting.
They blew up a lot of doors in that movie. I think, like, there needed to be a credit at the end of the movie saying no doors were harmed.
Except, like, tons of doors were harmed. We also really wanted to know who played the monkey that guy becomes friends with. They didn't mention the monkey. They didn't even say no animals were harmed. That monkey could have been beaten to death by its tail. Yeah,
that's what they said happened. They said they killed the monkeys, and then the monkeys weren't even credited in the credits. I know, because we sat through the credits. And
we were looking for the monkeys.
And there weren't monkeys.
Went to see two movies involving monkeys and sat through both of them to see if the monkeys were mentioned. Neither time. They didn't mention it in Holy Motors either.
They must not have a good union.
Monkey Union?
Monkey Union sounds like a great reality show.
It's a union of monkeys! And, like, you go to a board meeting and they're literally just, like, throwing poop at each other.
It's like, no wonder their union's in disarray. All they do at their board meetings is throw poop at each other.
Yo, but you know who probably has a great union is, like, the old world monkeys. You know, not like the South American monkeys, but, like, the gorillas. Because think about it. King Kong, Mighty Joe Young. Are chimps new or old? Because Dunstan Checks In, as we've established, is the greatest monkey movie ever made.
Yeah, I wonder how much Dunstan got paid.
I don't think his name was actually Dunstan.
Probably wasn't.
Like, that's just me thinking that actors and their characters always have the same name. It's not true.
It would be super convenient.
I think sometimes it is. Like, I'm sure, like, you know, the family dog on, like, Full House was probably just named Comet. Because, like, they couldn't think of another name for it.
Yeah, it would have been really confusing to the dog, too. Like, I feel like when you have a dog on set, to, like, get it to walk over to you, it's easier if it just has one name rather than, like, a stage name and
Eli, you're being naive. These dogs are consummate professionals. They have a union, and it's much more organized than the monkey union.
I know I'm Comet when I'm on stage, but when I'm home, I'm just Fido.
They just sit around a board table and, like, lick their genitals.
I love the image in my head of dogs sitting at tables in an awkward position with them just licking themselves. And then just looking around at each other.
You've clearly never tried to anthropomorphize a dog. Speaking of why the dogs were let in or out, you can sit them at a table pretty easily. And if you put sunglasses on, it looks like they're people.
Yeah. So Shark Tank. I've been watching too much of it.
No actual sharks, by the way.
No, well, the investors, they call sharks, you know, because they're fierce.
Actual sharks are not in a union, so they're technically scabs.
Yeah. So I also like how this is, like, the only reality show that follows up when, like, an investor invests or even doesn't invest. Like, a few episodes later, they'll tell you, like, what's going on with that business. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a really fast 40-minute show. I mostly just want to endorse it. But, you know, it's based on a Canadian show.
Is it? Called what? Shark Tank A?
No, it was called Dragon's Den. So I don't know why in Canada and other countries it's called Dragon's Den, but, like, they're, like, silly Americans.
It's because, like, in Canada the dragons have a much more forceful union. And they were like, look, we want this show to get made, but we just want credit where credit is due, okay?
Yeah, so, like, it started in Canada, and every other country where they've brought this concept, it's been Dragon's Den, it looks like, except America, where it's Shark Tank.
See, Shark Tank is confusing. There's already an established culture of shark-related TV shows in the United States. So you hear about a show called Shark Tank, you're like, oh, it's literally going to have sharks. No.
Yeah, but I kind of actually want to watch the Canadian version because they also have a lot of episodes of it on YouTube. And I want to, like, see, you know, just like we compared, you know, The Bachelor and The Bachelor Canada.
Yeah, see
Undercover Boss and Undercover Boss Canada. I want to compare Shark Tank and Dragon's Den, especially one a show that's about, like, fierce investors. I want to see if the Canadian one's just, like, all very, you know, like, cute little...
I can't imagine Canadians being cutthroat. I can't even imagine them being, like, you know, hinting that you might come near someone's throat with safety scissors. Like, they're way too friendly for that. Also, Canadian money is not real money. So, like, the premise of the show is inherently uninteresting.
They actually just use Monopoly money.
Yeah, they're like, it's just a show about, like, a bunch of executives playing Monopoly. And they're like, I'm on Park Place. I'm going to build a hotel.
That would be a great reality show, like real estate executives playing Monopoly together.
It sounds kind of like an art installation rather than a reality show.
It's more these men in suits playing Monopoly, just like they're playing with our lives on Wall Street.
Exactly. It's more of a comment on both the nature of reality shows, board games, and I guess Wall Street executives than it is like actual entertainment.
I want to write a sitcom about, you know, real estate executives, cutthroat real estate executives. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the show is like centered around like their, you know, conversations as they play Monopoly. Like that would be their, you know, their diner Seinfeld.
Or their circle in what's his name's basement in that 70s show.
Exactly. Like this would be about real estate execs who sit around, play Monopoly and tell stories about their, you know, cutthroat adventures.
When you first watched that 70s show as a kid, did you get that they were, like, smoking up in their basement? Or were you just like, oh, that's when they say funny things?
Oh, I'm not sure. I never really watched that 70s show that much. Remember that 80s show and it didn't last?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the same characters. That would have been really funny if it was, like, a continuation and it was, like, everyone's kids. But then why would you keep watching that 70s show if you know what happens?
Yeah, well, why would you watch The Carrie Diaries if you know what happens?
Oh, my God. The Carrie Diaries, it's so
dumb. I've heard it's really good, so...
I just have a problem with it because, like, you watch it and the clothes don't look 80s at all. Like, think about how obnoxiously Carrie dresses in, like, modern day. Or, like, you know, the modern day of 10 years ago when that show was actually a thing. Like, why would she not go all out with, like, acid-washed jeans and teased hair in the 80s? But no, she looks like... She looks prescient. That's the thing. Her fashion is like looking forward to 2013, which doesn't make sense.
It seems like they're not really trying that hard. It seems like The Carrie Diaries is almost more of a reboot of Sex and the City than an actual prequel. Because apparently there's already a few things that like don't work
in the continuity. Yeah, with the continuity. Well, it's less Sex and the City and more like, you know, Handies and The Rec Room.
Yeah, I know that, like, they're, like, really self-conscious about when she will have sex on the show. Like, they're very,
yeah,
you know, unsure about when they should introduce sex into the, you
it's
know.
It's just, it's kind of messed up. Like, credit to Lena Dunham for pointing out how obsessed girls of our generation are with Sex and the City. Like, that's supposed to be our paragon of, like, dating savvy, you know? And everyone's supposed to know which character they are. And for the record, I'm a Miranda because I don't give a shit about how my hair looks and I'm smarter than all of my friends. Wow, that sounded really mean. That's not what I meant.
Yeah.
What are those quizzes called online? Where, like, do you remember before, like, Facebook existed, there were those sites that just had quizzes?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like Quizilla, that was it. I took a lot of Quizilla quizzes. I was always Miranda.
Yeah, or you would take the Harry Potter house one. Like, which Harry Potter house?
Well, and
you?
I always consciously selected so that I would be in Ravenclaw, because that's my house.
I had a crazy dream last night where I saw a brain quest, a new brain quest.
Nice.
But it was Brain Quest Hufflepuff Edition.
What?
And I was like, I don't know. And I remember even in the dream, I was skeptical. I was like, I don't know if you can fill up an entire Brain Quest game with Hufflepuff questions.
Was it like questions only for Hufflepuffs? Or was it like questions about like Helga Hufflepuff herself?
I think it was questions about the House of Hufflepuff and just Hufflepuff trivia in general.
That's stupid. It's like
I didn't look any further. I saw it in the store in my dream and thought about buying it, and then I didn't.
I wish, and like, one of the questions would be like, how dead is Cedric Diggory? So dead.
Like, that was just a very odd dream to have. But I kind of regret that in the dream I didn't look further into the questions.
Penelope Clearwater, does she suck? Flip it over. Yeah, she kind of does.
All right, that's it for Hufflepuff. It was a big deck in the dream. I was like, I don't know if they can fill this up with enough questions about
that. Was your subconscious being like, don't open this deck because there's not going to be anything in here because you can't think of any questions.
My dream would go to a really dark place.
Gareth Menengi's dark place.
I woke up heartbroken that it's like one of those dreams where you fall in love with a woman and get married and have children and see your whole life flashing by, then you wake up empty and alone.
Let me tell you how many times that's happened to me. Like, every morning, there's a halo hanging from the corner of my dream girlfriend's four-post bed.
Except you wake up, and in this case, you're just like, you don't have Hufflepuff Brain Quest cards.
Yeah, she just, like, sublimates, and they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, I remember I woke up this morning, and, like, in my, like, you know, waking up haze, I wasn't sure about Brain Quest cards. I was like, did that happen? And it didn't. It was a dream.
Tragic. Well,
I used to read Hufflepuff Brain Quest cards. It was really, really hard coming up with all those. I was trying to do Biggie. It was cool.
Oh, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone actually watches Shark Tank besides Eli, especially Canada, or I'm sorry, Dragon's Den, I would love to hear about it. I don't actually want to watch it, but I'll totally take secondhand commentary.
And I don't think it's in French or anything like Le Den de Dragon.
Way.
How would you say that?
That sounds pretty much accurate.
The Don de los Dragon. Oh, no, that would start to be Spanish now.
Ich bin ein Dragon's Den. I was at Eli's house, actually in Los Angeles, the other day on vacation.
I don't have a house. I have an apartment. Oh. I don't know why I said that so angrily.
Whatever. I was hanging out there and I was reading Twitter before we went out, and I noticed that there was a promoted tweet from Orville Redenbacher. And it was something like, what is your favorite classic hashtag movie to watch with popcorn? And I was like, this is dumb. Like, social media is not going to add any value to that brand. Like, that brand is for old people in grocery stores. But then Eli mentioned that there's actually some brands that he does follow on Twitter, surely for, I don't know, nostalgic comedic value, maybe?
For amazing value? For great tweet and being informed value?
Which is what?
Well, so I follow Cap'n Crunch on Twitter, and it's in character as Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, it's not just like, it's not just the post Quaker and or Kellogg cereal company tweeting about all of their cereals. There is literally a Twitter account called twitter.com/realcap'ncrunch.
And it's verified, so don't you worry that this is just some person pretending to be the real Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, no, they've got the blue check mark. And his biography on Twitter says, famous Cap'n, adventurer, breakfast connoisseur, formerly lost at sea and glad to be found. Like, how adorable is that? If Cap'n Crunch actually had a life story, I'm pretty sure that would be it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know the life story except that his name was Horatio.
Oh, interesting.
That's all I know about the... He was based on a real person, actually.
Well, it's like how the Quaker Oats guy is named Larry.
Yeah, that's so strange. He doesn't look like a Larry.
So, but here's the thing. The Cap'n Crunch Twitter is in character and doesn't really tweet about cereal very much at all. So, like, for instance, 7 hours ago he tweeted, the American War of Independence ended today in 1783. Sounds like a pretty good occasion for an inauguration to me. Hashtag crunch history lessons. Like, yeah, that's true. But like, what? How is that tweet going to in some way motivate people to buy Cap'n Crunch, the cereal?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'd love to be that intern that's just in charge of this right now.
On January 19th, which was yesterday, he tweeted, I've been waiting a year to say, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Phew, okay, I'm good for another 12 months.
Like, if I controlled that Twitter, I would like put so many codes in it for my friends. I'd be like, look what I'm going to tweet on Cap'n Crunch today.
The day before yesterday, he tweeted, hashtag, for one day I wish I could hang with Davy Jones. Figure out what his locker combo is just in case I ever get stuck there. Hashtag planning ahead. Hashtag loopholes.
It would be much better if it was misdirection than he's like, I'd love to just sing Daydream Believer with him.
wait, this is great. This is great. Also, the day before yesterday, he tweeted, there's a saying, slow as molasses in January. What is it that makes the moles, any part of them, slow? The cold or just winter laziness? Like, that's kind of blue for a Cap'n Crunch
tweet. That's really blue for the Cap'n Crunch Twitter. Jeez, tone it down, intern. Someone got a talking to for tweeting that one.
Like, these are really dumb. Another good thing about ship living, I can declare a quarantine and avoid the flu this year. Hashtag my own vaccine. Hashtag benefits.
I just love that the cereal company actually got this verified. You know what a really fun place to work would be at Twitter? The verification office. Like, I don't know if that's an office.
Or, like, one person, probably.
But, like, I don't know how you get verified, you know?
Okay, here's the other thing. He tweeted on January 15th, Happy 12th birthday, at Wikipedia. I knew I'd make it when I saw my own page there back in 2002. Hashtag history. True story, as soon as I heard that Cap'n Crunch had a Twitter account, I looked him up on Wikipedia.
Huh.
This guy gets it.
Yeah, he said, this is for real 21st century social marketing shit.
Fan question, could the Cap'n make a crunch so crunchy that he himself could not crunch it? I love a challenge to the laboratory. Hashtag giddy. Like, here's the thing. Any crunch is too crunchy because all of them do that thing where they gouge holes in the roof of your mouth. Like, I have literally spat blood after eating Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, Cap'n Crunch is a dairy, like a super dangerous cereal to eat, which is probably why I don't eat it often. Not that I really ever eat cereal, but if I did, I probably wouldn't eat much Cap'n Crunch because it's dangerous. Like, that shit hurts. It's like, that happens to me when I eat apples sometimes too, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he is also tweeting against Larry. So this is National Oatmeal Month? Humph. I still don't have a month or a day. Mutiny! And then the next tweet he sent was, mutiny canceled. Can't beat that classic. Oh, well, at least I can celebrate National Milk Day in style.
I love Cap'n.
This is, I mean, like, the thing is, none of it is like, how much do you love Cap'n Crunch? It's great. It's like, literally, if the captain of Cap'n Crunch were a real person and had a Twitter account, it's plausible that he would send any of these tweets.
So we were hoping that more cereal mascots had Twitter accounts.
Right. And it turns out that A, we can't think of the names of a lot of cereal mascots, and B, they don't.
Yeah. Like, so Tony the Tiger doesn't have one. That was one of the names we could come up with. We did see a Twitter account for @FreeTonyTiger, who is a tiger who lives at a truck stop in Indiana that people want to be freed.
Yeah, Tony 2012. Don't forget.
Tony 2012. Never forget Tony 2012.
I also wanted to look up and see if the bee from Honey Nut Cheerios had a Twitter, but like...
But what's his name?
Is it just like bee?
Who knows?
Honey Nut Bee?
It's probably something dumb like Honey Nut Bee.
If it were a girl, it might be Honey, but it's a boy. Because his voice is Billy West.
Who's the voice of everything?
Who's the voice of everything? But mostly Fry from Futurama and Doug from Doug.
Or Stimpy from Ren and Stimpy or anything else.
Oh, this is adorable. Hashtag mention a good couple. Milo and Otis. You thought I was going to say milk and cereal, didn't you? Well, I'm a sucker for dogs and cats occasionally.
So it looks like the Honey Nut Cheerios bee doesn't have a name. All the Wikipedia page says about the mascot is their mascot is an anthropomorphic bee.
Well, that's not helpful, wait. Wikipedia.
Wait. No. I see. Wait, I missed the next line. The bee buzzed around without a name until 2000, when Christine Tong, a fifth grade student from Coolidge, Texas, won a national contest to name the bee.
And?
Okay, so she won a national contest to name a bee, all right? So it had to be pretty clever, right, for a national contest?
Mm-hmm.
She named him Buzzbee.
That's stupid.
But, like, it kind of makes sense, like, the name Buzzbee, but it's spelled Buzzbee, you know, like, buzz like a bee, but not spelled B-U-S-B-Y.
That's as obvious as the name Cap'n Crunch for...
Or as obvious as the name, like, Egbert for, like, a chicken, you know?
Wait a minute, oh my god! January 4th, Cap'n Crunch sends the following tweet. This must be the simplest yet most confusing sentence ever. Buffalo, 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 buffalo. My head hurts.
It's not as good as Ruffalo, 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 Ruffalo.
I don't care. He's my new favorite.
So other mascots, Trix Rabbit, I think it's just named Trix Rabbit, but he doesn't have a Twitter account.
Yeah, and he obviously, I mean, he's kind of a failure. No one wants to hear his tweets because his whole character is contingent on not being able to eat the cereal that he advertises.
I like this sentence on the Wikipedia page for Trix Rabbit. This is under marketing and advertising. This is very poetic for a Wikipedia page about a serial character. The plight of the Trix rabbit has drawn comparisons to Sisyphus, a Greek figure who is doomed to endlessly repeat a futile task.
Okay, if there's a national contest to name the Trix rabbit, I want to name him Sisyphus.
Sisyphus like, the Trix rabbit.
It's a good
Trixophus.
Way to...
Trixophus! It's a great name.
It's not the best portmanteau.
But it's okay.
So there's an official Twitter account for just like Kellogg's, which is fine, but mostly it's like people retweeting stuff when they mention Kellogg's. So like, here's one. Delaney enjoying her at Kellogg's _US Frosted Flakes, or Snowflakes as she calls them. And it's like some army wife's kid eating Frosted Flakes.
Weird.
And then they retweeted AJ and he said Frosted Flakes and bananas. Like, is that really worth retweeting? That's not even a sentence. And for some reason, there's like four carrots after it. Like, it's like he was holding down the period key, but accidentally had shift on.
I love that they're called carrots. I've always loved that symbol's got a carrot.
This is... Wait. Small girl wanted to know how mommy and daddy got engaged. Learning something new, smiley face. And it's like an Instagram picture. Why did Kellogg's retweet this? This has nothing to do with cereal.
Wait, let's just tweet something at Kellogg's right now. Be like, yo, I like cereal.
You have to use hashtag great starts. Oh, this is awesome. Hashtag crazy good. RT, check out this photo of Harry and Zane opening some Pop-Tarts. I smell a collaboration. And then it's One Direction eating Pop-Tarts.
Well, that's something that's good to see.
It's ironic, too, because they're tarts of pop.
I'm tweeting at them right now as we speak. Yo, I love Kellogg's.
Oh, celebrity
can I get
dad.
A retweet?
Celebrity dad at Tay Diggs believes in the power of breakfast. See how you can help hashtag share breakfast.
Did you know the Lucky Charms leprechaun is just named Lucky? Like, come on, that's a little
I did know that. It's Does dumb. He have a Twitter account? I didn't even bother to look it up.
Let's see, Lucky the leprechaun.
Literally every tweet from him would be, they're after me, Lucky Charms. They're yeah. after me, Lucky Charms.
Yeah, it looks like there's not an official Lucky Leprechaun account.
Stupid. This is just Instagrams of people's cereal bowls that Kellogg is retweeting. Like
that's we now live in an age where we take pictures of our cereal with cool Instagram filters, you know?
Yeah, and we're like, this is important.
Okay, last mascot I need to know the name of is the Cocoa Puffs thing. Bird. His name is Sunny.
I knew that actually.
Sunny the
for
cuckoo
a while
bird.
I thought
yeah,
it
I feel
was
like
cuckoo,
I remember that
but...
now. He's got a nice little Wikipedia page too.
This is kind of sad. Kellogg's tweeted, we'd love to see your Fruit Loops creation. Make some art and a little mess and tweet us a picture. No replies.
I'm just going to tweet something really weird at them and see if they, you know, tweet it back.
Basically, everyone should just go follow Cap'n Crunch. I'm not, like, I thought I was going to make fun of him, but I actually have genuine admiration for whoever's running that Twitter account now.
So actually, they're doing their job right, because brand recognition and your appreciation of the brand has gone up, which subconsciously might make you more likely to choose Cap'n Crunch in the future.
Holy shit.
Milk and cereal.
Milk and cereal.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal and milk.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal, cereal.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal and milk.
Cereal and milk.
Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk.
Cereal and milk.
Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk. Cereal and milk.
Wait, FF.net something different.
Yeah, it's fanfiction.net.
Oh, yeah. This takes me to pantsu.net, and there's like this anime girl who's gripping her boob. Check out this site. Go to ff.net.
I don't
want
to go to ff.net.
Pretty hot. Some weird anime site. Girls have
pantsu.net. Oh, this is going to be gross. I don't want this in my browser history.
They have huge boobs.
Ah! Ah!
All right, well, I'm done on that site.
Echi otaku, I know what that means, and I'm upset that I know what that means.
What does that mean?
Well, okay, so echi is like a corruption of the Japanese pronunciation of H, which stands for hentai, which is like porn, and otaku is the Japanese word for like nerd, which Americans have co-opted to mean like someone who likes anime a lot. So an echi otaku is basically a weeaboo who's obsessed with cartoon porn.
Pee-wee's Playhouse fanfiction 6?
No, this is about classic literature fanfic. Stick to the topic.
Okay. No, there isn't any for Ulysses anyway.
Told ya.
Just checking. Oh, come on, don't put A's in A. Come on. There's no A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man either.
You're like, no one writes James Joyce fanfic. Get over it.
No, but like, who would write Angela's Ashes fanfic?
What's Angela's Ashes about?
Just like that, like, memoir from the Irish guy about how his family was, like, poor. I'm trying to think. What other books do I like?
Just think about shit you read in high school. It doesn't have to be something you like.
Okay. Let's see if there's Of Mice and Men fan fiction. There is. Wow, there's 176 of them. Of Mice and Men, colon, final chapter. Yeah. All right. I'm going to sort the Of Mice and Men ones by rated M because I want to see, like, a dirty. Yep. What was missing? Description. My sister pointed out that Slim and George are so totally in love in Of Mice and Men, so I decided I would write a little something for my friend, and it ended up here. George has been feeling lonely. He feels there is something missing in his life. He finally thinks he might have found it.
Gross.
God, George is devastated about the loss of Lenny, and Slim tries to comfort him.
In the depths of the internet, frequently you come across things that you didn't even realize were things. And there's no easier way to do this than to head on to fanfiction.net and start browsing through the archives.
A classic.
A classic. And it's pretty much a truth universally acknowledged at this point in the internet's history that people write strange fanfiction about, you know, Star Trek, Harry Potter, Buffy. But even stranger is when you take an unconventional subject for fanfiction and decide to run with it. So I obviously sequestered myself in the Shakespeare section of fanfiction.net, and I can't climb out because it's so messed up. The sheer volume of stuff that people produce, I'm not saying it makes perfect sense that people would want to sort of invent these things, but it's clearly just a bunch of, like, high school kids who have just read Romeo and Juliet and decide that, like, you know, what if Juliet never went to that party and they didn't fall in love then? What if they were actually fighting? What if they became exiled together? What if you read the rest to find out? This is Happy RJ by Angie Jones, and her avatar is a Pikachu, so that's how you know it's good.
That's a sure sign of quality.
Pretty much. Antonio will do anything in the world for his best friend Bassanio. Anything. Even give up his life. Well, I thought that was going to be Slash, but maybe it's just someone dying.
I was looking into Of Mice and Men fan fiction. So it looks like people in Of Mice and Men are really into slashing George and Slim. Let me just read like an excerpt. They don't have to know, Slim replied, running his fingers through George's thick brown hair. Slim captured George's lips once more. George forgot all his worries as he got lost in the kiss. Nothing felt wrong at all. Slim pulled George closer. He spelt of sweet barley and the soap George had found in Slim's box.
Oh, stop,
pulled
it's
away
creepy.
And started undoing George's shirt buttons. George gasped, but then remembered. They didn't have to know. It would be their secret. Between them, George started on Slim's shirt, his hands shaking as they undid each button. He looked down at what he was doing, blushing when Slim's hands brushed his skin.
Stop!
Slim finished the buttons, looking down at George, who was still fiddling with his own. Slim chuckled as George blushed. He was cute when he was embarrassed. Slim continued to watch George as he undid the buttons. When George finally finished and both shirts were discarded and forgotten, he looked up at Slim, blush still strong on his cheeks.
People are fucking blushing like crazy.
George, remember, it's just you and me, Slim said quietly. That's early on.
That's icky.
The person wrote, "Ooh, sorry if it's short, this is kind of my first story. I wrote another but deleted it and have only been reading for about half a year."
Reading? Like, literally they just learned to read.
Anyway, please review if you liked it. If not, review anyway and tell me it's rubbish. I need to know these things. No one reviewed.
The thing is, like, I don't understand. I can understand. It's sort of like human nature to read a story and imagine what the characters do off stage. But who would read Of Mice and Men and be like, you know what this needs? More boning.
I am reading the review. There are some reviews. Gummy Madman said, "Okay, I'm new to this. Your book is the first I've read on here, and I followed you. And OMFG, it is so sexual and amazing. I will never see them the same."
Well, me neither, but that's not a good thing.
Also, Mimi Kiljivas said, "OMG, I love you for writing this. Me and my friend noticed this as well while studying Of Mice and Men in English. I love the plot. It's just so squee. Sorry, it was just adorable."
Ugh. All right, here are two that I found that I really like. This is called I Am Here by Chippo843. Hamlet is filled with regret from the sin he committed. In fact, he had killed someone precious to him that he became a soulless ragdoll. That's not really a sentence. Though he wasn't alone, for Laertes stayed by his side no matter what. The two are equally wounded on the inside, but hopefully they'll be able to move on without him in their lives. Then there's also Rosencrantz and Guildenstern walk in on Hamlet and Horatio in an interesting scenario. Rated T includes slash Rosencrantz x Guildenstern and Hamlet x Horatio. There's no... Jeez. It's like if someone had been like, I'm going to write this play called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, except instead of dead, it's going to be horny.
That would have worked much better, I feel like.
That's my porn parody of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. It's called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are horny.
Mine is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead sexy. yeah. Someone should make it. I'm sure someone has.
This one is called Hamlet Article. Hey guys, I have to write this article for a fake newspaper for lit class about an arts and accents thing for the play Hamlet. If you guys could read it and let me know what you think, that'd be really helpful. I know it doesn't sound finished. Any ideas on how I can make it sound finished? Thanks so much, everyone! Like, what sort of stupid lit class assignment is like, you're a reporter at Elsinore, write an article about what's going on? Like,
extra, extra, everybody!
That's not, I mean, I would be the first person to support creative writing exercises in schools, but I don't think the way to start is by, like, pseudo-journalism.
No, that's common. Maybe not in your private schools, but I feel like I got that assignment so much for, like, history class or something. Like, well, you're at the French Revolution, and you're reporting on it.
Like, a history, it makes sense to do something journalistic, because that's literally about learning facts. So
well, there could have been reporters on the Elsinore beat.
And they were like, yo, I think that Horatio is making eyes at Hamlet.
I have a website called elsinorist.com. It tells you what's going on around in and around Elsinore.
XOXO, Elsinore girl. it's just like a boldface names column, but about Elsinore.
I'm going to name my daughter Elsinore.
It's actually a pretty good name.
Yeah, you could call her Elsie.
Or Eli.
Oh, man.
If you spell it wrong.
Yeah, if I don't have a son and I want to still name someone Eli, I could name a daughter Elsinore and misspell it Ellisnore. Eli Snore.
That sounds like a Pokemon.
Eli Snore used Snore. I don't know.
Now, to be fair, there is a book that I haven't read yet, but I really want to read, that's like a modern retelling of Romeo and Juliet from Rosaline's perspective. Like, that's interesting. And
great idea.
It's not creepily dirty or anything. But like, if you are just like, well, Hamlet and Horatio. I mean, here's one. This one's in French. Hamlet a besoin de la fantôme de son père. L'encourage à nouveau. Il tente de l'invoquer lui-même. Cette fois, mais il n'obtient pas ce qu'il attendait. Magnifique écrite pour Halloween. Scène manquante au début du cinquième acte. Man, I can't remember French, but it's basically about his ghost.
How do you say ghost in French?
Fantôme.
Oh, like a phantom.
This is a good one. It's called Evidence That I Love You. My version of Romeo and Juliet. Juliet's a bit more resistant. Romeo's less romantic. Here's a quote to help you make your mind up. I nodded at my cousin, and Romeo went, and? He'll kill you. Then why do you want me to stay? My dad won't let him kill you here. Imagine the cleaning. The cleaning, really? I know, stupid. If I was him, I already would have killed you. I think... I don't know.
People.
Also, there seems to be a lot of fanfiction revolving around Tybalt. Like, I don't remember Tybalt being that intriguing of a character that he needed his own story. But apparently people are like, everyone knows the tale of Juliet and Romeo, parted by family and reunited by death. But others died in their story. Others like Tybalt. Who did the young man love and was loved when no one else did? Who was waiting for him to return that faithful day? Or fateful day. I can't read. The answer is no one cares.
I somehow just got to the M-rated Lizzie McGuire fanfiction.
What are you doing?
I don't know how I ended up here, but somehow...
You were probably like, Lizzie McGuire, and I'm only going to read the M-rated ones.
Something like that. Lizzie and Miranda decide that it's time to take it to the next level, to be more than just friends.
No, it's not time. It's not time at all.
And this starts in medias res. It starts with the line, "Oh, Miranda, are you sure about this?" Lizzie asked. Miranda placed a small kiss on Lizzie's lips and nodded. "Of course I am. I have been wanting you for ages now."
Oh my god, stop, stop. No, this is gross. I felt weird enough when they decided that Lizzie and Gordo were going to be a couple, let alone Lizzie and Miranda.
after it was all over, they hugged naked on the bed together.
Stop. I really didn't want this segment to devolve into like just porny fanfics of shows we remember from our childhood.
Okay, we're done. I'm done with that one.
But I guess that's inevitable.
It's a really short, like, this isn't even a story. It's 278 words. Like, that's like this is literally like could be anything.
Well, that's the thing about a lot of fanfiction is they'll like write a story, but it's like alternate universe. Like the Veronica Mars fanfic I was reading that was about like a reporter in the 1930s and a gangster. Like, what does that have in common with the actual plot of Veronica Mars? Nothing. Like, you should just write a story. Like, people can write fanfic. That's cool. But if they want to write one that like has nothing to do with the original series and just has some like personality traits in common with some of the characters, then maybe they should just write their own story and see where it takes them.
Yeah, isn't that like what 50 Shades of Grey was at first?
It was, in fact. It was an alternate universe Twilight fanfic called Master of the Universe. And then they, like, you know, Control F replaced all of the names, and boom, a publishable book that makes millions.
That's actually kind of amazing. Like, I'm not even going to diss that. Like, that's, like, incredible to me.
Here's what our new mission should be. Just scouring fanfiction.net for the next 50 Shades of Grey. You know, just rename the characters and keep all the, like, weird kinky shit.
This Lizzie McGuire one that's 277 words has promise.
277 whole words. Brilliant. Blow it up to, like, 76-point type and you've got a trade paperback.
With pics. What's Miranda doing? Like, that's, like
LaLanne?
Like, who played Miranda?
LaLanne!
Who's LaLanne?
Her name that's is her just name? LaLanne. It's, like, LaLaine.
I did not know that.
She has her own Wikipedia page, so she's as real as Cap'n Crunch, which doesn't really mean anything.
I didn't know she was like a one-person name kind of girl.
I don't think it's that. There's no like test you have to pass. Like, I think you can just decide you only want to have one name.
Well, she was a member of the band Vanity Theft from 2010 to 2011.
She is normally credited by her first name only.
Did you know that she was arrested in 2007 and charged with felony possession of methamphetamine?
Nice.
She has pleaded guilty to the crystal meth charge, but her record was expunged after she completed a drug treatment program.
In late July 2011, LaLanne was featured in a Shane Dawson video entitled Urban Legends with a Z. She was also featured in another one of Shane's video titled Hot Chick or Cat Lady.
She was in Easy A. She played Gossipy Girl in a cameo.
Wow, she didn't even get a real character name. She failed the Tobolowsky test.
Yeah, poor girl.
That's pretty sad.
Like, she was somebody. She could have been a contender, but now she's just
that girl.
I want to listen to her band, Vanity Theft. They're an all-girl indie slash alternative rock group from Springboro, Ohio.
Oh man, Springboro, Ohio, noted hotbed of indie rock.
Yeah, Springboro.
You know what they say? It's like the Portland of the Midwest.
Yeah, but LaLanne was asked to leave in January of 2011, just before touring was to resume. So she got kicked out of Vanity Theft. Like, she wasn't even enough of a draw.
The band has been described as some early Ohio press as having a sound, quote, somewhere between the work of Sleater Kinney and the Ting Tings.
It's kind of interesting. I might listen to some Vanity Theft now. Vanity T.
I mean, I do like all-girl bands, but I'm not sure I'm going to like this all-girl band.
I'm sure I'd like them.
Oh, man. I really got to get my hands on Vanity Theft The Lost Tapes, their web show from 2012.
If they had a festival centered around them, it should totally be called the Vanity Fair.
Fair. This is a great quote from her in the New York Post. LaLanne is blunt about her band, saying, "We may have vaginas, but we're not pussies." Whoa!
Nice.
Maybe that fanfic wasn't so far off base after all.
Yeah, she sounds fierce.
Wow, Vanity Theft promo shot. They don't look bad. Maybe Vanity Theft is our new favorite band.
It's also gotten... It's funny, I just need to note that... It is now really dark in my room because I didn't have the light on when I started recording because there was light from outside. Now I just realized that I'm sitting in the dark. Like, it is totally dark in my room right now. I'm just sitting here in the dark looking at the Wikipedia page for LaLanne, just staring at the screen talking. It's kind of amazing.
Aren't you glad what your life has become?
And all the girls dreamed that they'd be your partner. They'd be your partner. Song is about you. You're so vain. I'll bet you think this song
Well, I guess that's going to do it for us this week.
It is going to do it for us this week. And the only reason we have not yet released the recording of Pathetic Live, which was a blast, I have to say,
it was great,
because we really wanted Pathetic Live to be episode 20, so there needed to be an intermediary episode, which is this one. So stay tuned. In roughly a week, I will get the tapes from Gary Thornburg, our illustrious intern and sound engineer, and fire them up on the old mixing board or whatever, and they will be soon downloadable for your listening pleasure. It was a really, really fun party for all, like, seven of our live audience. And
way more than that. There were multitudes.
There were more than 20, definitely. And, like, definitely I couldn't feed everyone with the 3 boxes of frozen pigs in a blanket I got from Trader Joe's.
Because pigs in a blanket were so good.
But let's be honest, like, with pigs in a blanket, you could definitely, like, it's a box per person, more or
less. I kind of want to go to Trader Joe's right now and buy pigs in a blanket. Like, I'm rearing to go.
All right. Well, on that note, go buy some pigs in a blanket. Go to our Facebook page. You can see some awesome pictures from Pathetic Live. It's facebook.com/pathetic. Our Twitter is @patheticpod. The website is pathetic.com. Always pathetic with an I. Always eating pigs in a blanket. And we'll see you next week, except that we won't see you. We'll hear you, and you will actually hear us.
Good night, everybody.
So why not take a crazy chance? Why not do a crazy dance? If you lose the moment, you might lose a lot. So why not? Why not? Why not take a crazy chance?
Wow, why am I so scratchy? I feel like there's bugs on me, but there's not.